You're listening to CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. We're broadcasting from unceded Musqueam Territory in British Columbia. What does it take to have a successful career as a designer? Let's find out with today's guest, John Fluvog. Welcome to our first episode of Question Everything, where we connect young leaders with experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and I'm excited to be here at the Fluvog store in Gastown, Vancouver, with the one and only John Fluvog. I first met John and his wife Ruth through our mutual friends in New York a few years ago, and I've since fallen in love with Fluvog shoes and the creativity that the brand represents. John has been in the shoe business for more than 45 years and has 20 Fluvog stores located throughout Canada and the U.S. His shoes are truly designed for creative souls and have been worn by celebrities like Madonna, Whoopi Goldberg, and Scarlett Johansson. In today's episode, we learn how John began his career as a designer and discuss what the most important characteristics young employees and entrepreneurs must have to be successful. John talks about the importance of staying true to yourself and to your vision and shares the most important lesson that he's learned through 45 years of experience. So thank you so much for being with us today, John.
Yeah, I know people can't see it because we're on radio, but I am not in a wheelchair, even though I have been in business for like 47 years or something.
Wow. How did you first begin your career in design?
Well, I didn't set out to be a designer. I've never been to school for design. I didn't even do art in high school. I played the trumpet, which hasn't done me a lot of good. I came at it from a back door. It was not my chosen career, but I started in business with a man named Peter Fox, who was my partner, business partner, in 1970, and it just kind of progressed from there. And I guess if you look at a snapshot of it, you'd say, well, or I would say, I did it because I needed to make a living. As simple as that.
Was it scary for you to begin your business and to make the first step to go in it by yourself?
Well, everybody's got a different story, right? People come up to me often, young people or people in arts or they want to get into design, they'll come up and say to me, John, how did you start? And I find it's always a little bit cruel when I tell them that I just sort of fell into it. I have no training. I didn't sort of work at it. I did, but I didn't. So first of all, when I was 21 years old, I'm working in a shoe store. The guy who's managing the store decides to go out on his own. He mentions it to me, and one thing led to another, and he goes to my father, who is kind of a friend of his as well, and asked if my dad would lend him any money. And my dad wasn't really wealthy, but my dad said to him, okay, I'll lend you this $13,000 if you make my son, that'd be me, a 50% partner. Mm-hmm. And that's actually how I started. It wasn't my idea, put it that way. I sort of fell into it. And as my career evolved, I mentioned to you it was sort of like having to make a living. Well, I'm in partnership with 10 years with a guy who's 15 years my senior. And really good at what he did. And I would say he paved the way for me or showed me the way. And 10 years later, I bought him out and was on my own. So that was probably the really scary part. And I came to a point maybe 6 years after that, like in the mid-80s, where it was a turning point. I was probably bankrupt or close to it. And I made a decision to start doing my own shoes.
I'm wondering, what was your upbringing like? And when you were 21, what was your attitude towards business and entrepreneurship?
Well, back in my day, but it is sort of like back in my day, there wasn't as many obstacles, at least in my mind, and I don't think in anybody's mind. Things came easier, I think, and there was a general upswing of the economy and how things were. It was just a little easier. It didn't seem so complex or confusing.
I know that you did a hitchhiking trip down the West Coast in the 60s, and was that before or after you began?
Oh, that was before.
That was before?
Yeah, I did sort of the typical 60s. I lived in a commune in Palo Alto, California with a bunch of guys, and you know, crazy things, running around naked in the backyard. Although I didn't do that, of course. And, yeah, I think I've always been alternative. I've grown up in a, I grew up, you know, in the 70s where it was alternative. And I, the funny thing I find now about the industry I'm in is how young people aren't alternative. They're fed mainstream things and they do mainstream thing. You know, I don't know how to put it. It's like, so one of the biggest fashion items right now is our Nike shoes, and everyone's wearing Nike. Well, and back in my day in the 60s, that would be just unheard of, that a large company would be telling the younger generation what they should wear or what they should do or how they should do it. And so I find it funny that all these artists, hip-hop artists and people are getting, you know, sponsorship money and all that kind of stuff from these, some of the biggest companies in the world. So I find that that's quite different.
Why do you think young people are afraid to be different and to be alternative?
I think it's a complicated reason. I don't know, obviously, exactly what that would be. But I know that when my kids grew up, we did everything for them. We drove them to, you know, swimming and soccer and dancing and whatever it was. And you know, when I grew up, if we wanted to go and be involved in something extracurricular, having my parents drive me to that would have been unheard of. And you just go, you know, maybe if you needed a few bucks to join something, you'd go ask your parents and then you go off and do it. So maybe it's more of an independence.
For sure. I studied design in university, and I think it can be really tempting to do things that you think your professor will like or what you think other people would like. And how have you created designs that are so unique and kind of done your own thing while also appealing to your audience and customers?
Well, now the statement I'm going to make now, I don't think is true now as it was, but back when I started designing in the 80s, there was nobody doing it here. There was no footwear companies, one, and there was nobody doing it. And design itself wasn't even cherished, or it wasn't such an interest in design in general. So what I did was I had no design background. So I remember thinking to myself, well, how do you do this? Right? How do you, you know, like, I want to do my own shoes. Like, what are they going to look like? Well, they can't look like anybody else's, because then they'll look like everybody else's. So I think what you do is you do original things. Well, how do you do that? You just do whatever comes to you, right? Oh, that's what you do. So I remember seeing a few things that influenced me, and I went, okay, I'll just do this because it feels right to me.
You've also spoken about how you've received some of your inspiration from cars.
Yeah, cars. Well, I've always, growing up in the 50s, and I grew up I grew up in an ice cream drive-in next to a high school. So you talk about 50s culture, it was there, right? DuckTales, and cars are a big part of the culture. And what people and young people did with their cars in terms of the way they customized them, it was really part of the culture. So yes, I was influenced by that.
What is disability insurance? 1 out of 10 Canadians wouldn't know how to answer this question. What's more troubling is that 3 out of 4 Canadians say that being unable to work for 3 months due to a disability would severely impact their personal finances. But getting covered is easier than you think. It generally only costs between 1% and 3% of your income, and insurance benefits can maintain your income as though you're still at work full time. If you are a working person, then stay safe and get covered. Statistics courtesy of RBC Insurance.
You're listening to CITR Radio, and today we're speaking with shoe designer and entrepreneur John Fluvog. You've been a designer and entrepreneur for more than 45 years, and what do you think some of the biggest things are that have changed over the years? You mentioned that design wasn't as cherished as it is now and maybe as difficult to get into.
Well, there's a sense that it is, we're entering a time or in a time where small people can do really big things, and it never was before. There was a big divide. It was a divide between large companies that had all the resources and small people who had none. And now that is not true, as you know,
right?
With internet companies and small people doing startups and turning into big things, and we can all individually make a living by a lot of it's by working at home, by doing small bits and parts of things and doing them on our own. And I like to think what I like about what's happening now is that people are, in one sense, I complain that they're not being individuals, but on the other side, I see a great amount of individualism happening where people are doing things like on their own or doing things that feel right to them. I would say that they're being more human. Mm. And in their humanity, they're just traveling down roads that feel right to them. And there's a freedom in that, and there's also, great creative expression. So I think we're going into a period of a lot more creative expression than what I grew up with years ago. So it's exciting.
That is exciting. How has your design process changed and adapted over the years?
Well, there's, you know, when I started in business, like we'll go in the 80s, even 70s, 80s, none of the companies, the small companies that were around then are here now. And so you go, well, how come you are, John? And I don't know. I think it's very important, and particularly in the fashion industry, that you don't get stuck in a rut. And I've never never bought into entirely any look. Like, obviously, I've been through the 60s and then rock and roll 70s. It was hippies and then the disco era and then the early 80s, which were a washout. And then came alternative things in the, you know, end of the 80s. But I was never really part of, and never have been part of, or bought into hook, line, and sinker any particular look. I think it's much better to stand back and watch and see and be an observer.
With something as important as shoes, which is really the foundation for the body, I know that something that a lot of designers struggle with is form and function. Mm-hmm. And how do you create that balance with your designs?
They have to perform what they're made to do. And I have done shoes that have been, you know, not very useful, but I do them more as art pieces or things that are also brand creators. They just like, there's a wow factor. But yeah, things need to function and work. And as I move forward, my challenge is how to integrate modern technologies and new ways of doing things. So, you know, I have a 3D printer in my office, and we have people working in 3D. And through that, the amount of creativity that can happen is so much bigger. But having said that, it's also much more competitive, and so can everybody else. So it's a double-edged sword.
When you've designed your first shoe and didn't know how a shoe goes together, how did you come up with that? Was that through your partner that you were with at the time who taught you? Or?
Well, I was fortunate to know a guy who made shoes here in Vancouver. So the very first shoe I did, I made by hand here. And I just had such a passion to do it that I went to this guy and we started putting it together, and it wasn't about money. It was just about getting this shoe out. And the interesting thing is that very first shoe I did, I'm still selling today.
Wow.
In an iteration of it. It's not the exact shoe, but the influences that I thought of in 1985, I think it was, are still... the energy of it still goes on. Mm-hmm. So I say that sometimes, you know, when we get ideas, they can be very powerful and can see us through the future, as it were. And we can actually, that I would say that shoe changed my future. I've had a couple other shoes like that have defined the brand or even who I am. And when I've done them, they've never been current. They've been odd and unusual, but on some level, they tweak people's minds. And they supported it, and they bought the products. And I like to think sometimes about my shoes is that they're like stories. Like, it's like walking in a story, and my customers walk in a story that I've created. And so, as you know, there's messages sometimes on the shoes, and I put that kind of energy into them. But I think when people put something on, I can see them. They go and walk up to the mirror. They I like to think they could enter into the story that I've created for them.
When you first began, it was just you creating the shoes, and you were the only one writing that story. Yeah. And to be expanding that story and bringing other writers into that,
right.
How has that been to manage?
If I said it was easy, I'd be lying. It's difficult. It's actually a pain in the butt, truthfully, because the company's expanded in part because, I think mostly, in fact, because I've needed more volume to get the factories to make them. And over the time period, I designed only a few of the shoes, and I bought some in. And I bought most of them in. And over the years, I've more and more created, and designed and put together every piece of footwear that's in the shops. And if you look at it's a great variety of types of footwear, and they need to come from different factories. And so I need volume. The brand is unusual that way, that it has so many types of footwear. Most designer brands or designer clothing and or footwear end up having a certain kind of vibe or energy for a certain type of person. And they're mostly sold at wholesale to stores around the world, and they fit into a category, and I have all these different categories. So that creates a logistical problem of always doing new things from different factories around the world. So the design team, has a lot of it has got to do with the process of getting the shoes made, going to the factories, finding the factories, going to the factories, making sure that they're making the shoes the way we want them, bring materials in from different places, gathering things, and that's so I need people to help me do that, and that's what they do.
You've trained and hired and managed so many different people, and what do you think is the most important characteristic that young people must have to be successful as an employee?
Well, I think it's, first of all, it's the companies that they're working for, and they need to understand the end goal of the company. What's it actually trying to do? And I've had problems, particularly in the design end of it, keeping everybody on the same page, because as designers, they all have an opinion.
Right.
And sometimes a strong opinion, and if they don't get their own way, they get all poopy and pouty. And that's a challenge. So it's, and I would say it's keeping in mind what the actual end goal of this group of people is. And as a company, that's really all a company is it's a community or group of people working together for a goal. And how much value are you adding to that? And how do you fit in with everyone else? So that would be the challenge.
And on the opposite side of that, what advice would you give to young people who maybe don't want to work for other people and want to start their own businesses as you did?
Well, first of all, it's not easy. and it requires it requires really a strong vision to see over top of all the crap that's going on. Because the world isn't designed for things to be easy, actually. It's basically, I find myself spending most of my days ironing out crap around me. So it will become easier, but the crap is always there. So we're looking at, to be successful, I think we're looking at almost like making a crooked way straight, or straightening lines up so that the things can flow and work. And in order to do that, you need this vision again. You know, an entrepreneur or somebody on their own needs to have a strong vision of what it is that they're doing. It's a matter of touching people's emotions and feelings, and I hope that's what I do in my business, is touch. I'm selling, in the end, I'm actually selling feel good. I'm selling emotion and a feeling to make you feel special or different, because people can buy shoes anywhere. There's like a zillion shoes you can buy. You don't need to buy mine. So why are you doing it? Well, because to make you feel good.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night, right at 9 p.m., after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
You're listening to Question Everything with Carly Sotis on CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Today we're speaking with Vancouver-based shoe designer John Fluvog.
When you have so many different things on the go, how do you balance your personal and professional life? You have a large family and you're always traveling.
Yeah, that's a challenge. I think overall we need moral compasses in our lives. At the very foundation of who we are, if you don't have that moral compass in place, you'll get pretty wobbly pretty quick. When you step out the door in the morning, you need to know that simple things like, I'm going to, whatever, I'm not going to have an affair today. I mean, it sounds really dumb, but it's true. You need to make those decisions before you walk out of the door, because if you don't, things will come along and you'll get just driven around by the wind at whatever comes that day, and that, you know, that's hard to keep something on track when that happens.
Sure. I watched you and Ruth perform at your church Christmas concert in December, and I'm wondering what role music and faith have played in your life, if that's part of the moral compass.
Faith has always played a part for me. I think it's a glue that's kept me together. And I, in my day-to-day comings and goings, I rely on that as a, I used the word compass before, but maybe as a compass again. I rely on it as a foundation. And one needs a time to be alone, as it were. And then not just be alone with yourself, but listen to the creation within you. Because we're all created beings, I believe. And in that, you can hear and you can hear. Let's put that. There is voices. You always see people going crazy or hearing voices. But there's a still, quiet voice within us that wants to speak to us. And I think that we need to take time to hear that quiet voice. And it's not done, it's never done in an aggressive way. It is never done in it's all about me way. It's actually the opposite. And, you know, it's done in kind of a contemplative way.
Do you think that's part of the reason why you're so active and young and vital, and how you keep that energy and zest for life is taking that time to relax and listen to those things?
Yeah, I think it's really important. Otherwise, it could very easy to rattle to bits. And obviously, I'm two things. I'm one, I'm in business, and I have a business that needs to run. It's got to have cash flow and all that kind of stuff that businesses need. And on the other side, I have to come up, I have to be creative, and I know that's what drives a company. So there are times when, I can get kind of lose it, as it were, when I feel a little bit lost in terms of direction. Am I going the right way? Am I... it's a challenge. And then knowing that I've got, you know, whatever, a couple hundred employees that need a paycheck. And they kind of rely on this thing working. I didn't start out doing that. It's not what I started out to do, to have this responsibility. I still do. I just want to make cool shoes that people like. But along the way, it comes all this responsibility.
For sure. You've been in the business for more than 45 years. And as you look back and reflect on all of that, what do you think is one of the most important things you've learned?
Honesty. Honesty with others and with yourself. to analyze why we do things. Why do I do this? Why am I doing that? And it's hard to do because it's very difficult to always be honest with oneself. I find, you know, we have alternative, we have little stories that are running around the back of our brains that are telling us things, and we don't always stop to understand what those, why those stories are there and why we're doing things. Right. So I would say honesty is fundamentally, if you're not honest with your employees, if you're not honest with your suppliers, if you're not honest with yourself, I don't believe that you can actually gather a group of people around you that will get behind what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And consumers and customers, mm-hmm. People smell a rat, you know? So I would say that's the most important thing, is honesty right the way through, and integrity.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you, Carly. Nice to know you.
If you'd like to learn more about John and his designs, you can head on over to fluvog.com or follow them on Twitter and Instagram at fluvog. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode of Question Everything. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and each week I bring you inspiration and insights from creative minds and experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can download the show at iTunes, SoundCloud, and at citr.ca.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily.